This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We're going to pick up again now with the series that we've been doing about the goods and bads of globalization. It's called Trade-Off. Today, we bring you the four-letter word of global trade, tariff. Yes, I know. There are times when tariffs seem like they'd be a good thing. More often than not, those are times when people in power feel the economy's maybe not working so well for them. But you bring up tariffs in polite conversation with a bunch of economists, they are going to go right to the Smoot-Hawley Act of 1930, perhaps the most infamous of American tariffs, credited by some with tipping us into the Great Depression. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner and Scott Tong have the history of Smoot-Hawley with plenty of lessons for today.
If you believe the movies, this story is the most boring chapter in American history.
The most boring ever.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to alleviate the effects of the... Anyone? The Great Depression.
Ah, yes. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, circa 1986. That's the classroom scene.
Passed the... Anyone? The tariff bill, the Hawley-Smoot Tariff Act, which...
Ben Stein, comedian and real-life economist, plays the teacher while his students snooze, drool, skip altogether the Smoot-Hawley protectionism class.
Bueller.
But it's actually a fascinating tragedy that leads to an economic train wreck.
Our protagonist and tragic hero is Reed Smoot, Republican senator from Utah, and the powerful chairman of the Senate Finance Committee.
See, Smoot was a Mormon and a very high-ranking leader of the Church of Latter-day Saints.
A devout gentleman, and as it turns out, a devout protectionist. Back then, the Mormon Church dominated the sugar beet industry out west. Mormon historian Matthew Godfrey has written all about it.
Wilford Woodruff, who was president and the prophet of the LDS Church when they got into the sugar business, said that he had had a revelation from God that the church needed to get into the sugar business.
So Mormon farmers grew beets, and the church controlled a huge sugar company, Utah Idaho Sugar. In a little town that hugs the Wasatch Mountains called Spanish Fork, you can still see the remains of one of the company's sugar beet factories.
Now it's located right by I-15. You can hear the cars going by.
We approach a dark, abandoned space and peek inside. A century ago, this was where the sugar beets were sliced up and ground into a pulp before extracting the sugar.
So it looks to me like there's a chute up there that the beets would drop down into.
Senator Smoot wanted to protect Utah's beet sugar from the imported stuff, mostly cane sugar.
He used kind of very nativistic philosophies of the time, believing that white Americans were kind of the premier race at the time. And so he believed that if you could support an industry that included farmers who were white Americans, that that was more beneficial than relying on sugar that was grown by individuals from Cuba or areas outside of the United States.
Not only was that morally and economically dubious, it wasn't necessary. In the late 1920s, imported crops were not what really sank American farmers. Prices were low all over the world.
But the good protectionists didn't let that fact get in the way.
The Republican Party had to be seen as doing something to help farmers to win the farm vote in the Midwest.
That's Doug Irwin, Dartmouth economist, who wrote the book on Smoot-Hawley. It's called Peddling Protectionism. He says Congress initiates tariff hearings in 1929, at which point our nice little help the farmers package gets hijacked by city folks, a.k.a. Eastern manufacturers.
That's what brings out all the lobbyists and the industry groups saying this is an opportunity for us to sort of piggyback on the farm tariff by getting higher tariffs on ball bearings and steel and textiles and shoes and bricks.
And bottle caps and sprinkler tops.
And collapsible tubs and antimony, whatever that is.
Here's Irwin reading from a section in his book on kraut.
The National Kraut Packers Association called for an increase in the duty on kraut from 30% to 50%. A small firm in Maine requested a duty on canned sardines be raised from 30% to 50%. Someone from Ohio asked the tariff on imported goldfish to be increased to 35%.
Ah, the vital pet fish sector.
So how did this happen? Well, have you ever heard of congressional log rolling? Anyone? Tong?
Kind of.
Okay. Say we chop down a tree together.
Mm-hmm.
I help you roll a bunch of logs to your house. You help roll some to mine. Or in this case, you support my tariff. I support yours.
Ah, which helps all of us do one thing. charge higher prices because of less competition. Well, the bill passes the House and it moves over to the Senate. And now we get to smoot and smut.
Wait a minute. Did you just say smut?
Yes, I did. Our Mormon protagonist also wants to ban the import of obscene materials.
He took a particular umbrage, for example, at D.H. Lawrence's Lady Chatterley's Lover for having obscene passages in it.
You can Google them later.
And apparently he had a big stack of these books saying, you know, this is obscene material. We shouldn't be allowing this in the country. And people were pointing up saying, well, why are you have all these books? What are you doing reading them?
How'd you get them?
Yeah, exactly. How'd you get them?
Smoot, smites, smut is the famous headline of the day.
So the bill adds that, and it keeps moving. Nobody stops it.
Though a bunch of economists try, 1,028 of them, they write a letter to President Herbert Hoover warning it would lead to higher prices at home and retaliatory tariffs from America's trading partners.
But Congress disses them as blah, blah intellectuals. Take these two Republican senators, reenacted here.
I am not overawed by the proclamation of college professors who never earned a dollar by the sweat of their brow by honest labor.
Free trade intellectuals seem more concerned with the prosperity of foreigners than the well-being of our own American people.
Journalists oppose this, too. But somebody else's voice is entirely missing from this debate. Can you guess who that is? Anyone? Gardner?
I think it was consumers.
You got it. And pay attention here. This is the key to why protectionism is so often a political winner. Consumers who stand to pay a little bit more for sugar or sauerkraut tend not to protest. We'll call it the who cares effect.
Protectionism only sticks consumers with a nickel more here, a nickel more there. So who cares?
But producers, a few producers pocket all those nickels. They care.
So even though it made bad economic sense, the bill made good political sense. And all the industries that successfully lobbied loved it. In June 1930, President Hoover signs Smoot-Hawley into law. And then something happens that those pesky economists predicted, a trade war. Again, Doug Irwin.
Other countries began to mimic the U.S., saying, well, if the U.S. is going to become isolationist, maybe we should do the same thing as well. So it sort of unleashes this dynamic, the falling dominoes, where other countries move in a protectionist direction as well.
So all this breeds ill will and a rising ultranationalism in Europe in the 1930s.
So what exactly was the damage from Smoot and Hawley's big adventure?
Anyone? Anyone know the effects?
Now, economists generally agree that the bill did not plunge us into depression. We were in the soup already. But it certainly didn't create jobs. And it probably deepened the depression since it shattered world trade. Everybody lost their global customers.
It also flipped the conversation about trade on its head. Up until the 1930s, protectionism was generally seen as a good, sort of patriotic thing.
Smoot-Hawley really just made protectionism a bad word. And it was associated with all sorts of things, declining exports, declining employment, Great Depression, ill will among foreign countries. It really did discredit protectionism as a doctrine in American political life.
The lesson here is a timeless one. Some call it the golden rule of protectionism. Tariff unto others as you would have them tariff unto you.
Bueller. Bueller.
Sarah Gardner.
Here. Scott Tong.
Present.
For Marketplace.